Rwandans have cast their votes in the presidential election today there. The incumbent Paul Kagame, who helped bring stability to the country after the genocide of 1994, he is expected to win by a landslide today. Rwanda has new schools, new roads. It's safer there since the genocide of the 90s, and that makes it hard to challenge Kagame's record on development. But that doesn't mean his record on democracy is quite as stellar. In fact, in the run-up to the election, some have begun to question his dedication to democracy. Kagame is accused in some cases of using violent means to force out his opposition. In June, the former head of the Rwandan army was shot in South Africa. He survived, but he accused Kagame of ordering that attack. And days later, a prominent journalist of a local tabloid in Rwanda was investigating the shooting, and he was murdered. Then last month, a senior member of the Democratic Green Party was killed as well. Earlier, we spoke to Stephen Kinzer, author of A Thousand Hills, Rwanda's Rebirth and the Man Who Dreamed It. And we were joined by Will Ross, East Africa correspondent for our partner, the BBC. He was at a polling station in the middle of the capital while polls were still open, and he told us what the turnout was like.
It looks like a very, very high turnout, and the whole process from what we could see at the polling station we were at was a sign of a very efficient system. The queues were pretty long at the beginning of the day. People got there very early.
Well, Amnesty International had warned that the elections today would be conducted in a climate of fear. Are you seeing signs of that?
Well, that is a very, very difficult question to answer, because basically the people you speak to in Rwanda, it's very difficult to get them to open up and talk about any sort of sensitive issues. In the past, you know, people who oppose the governing party and have put their head up a bit too high have tended to get themselves into trouble, and it doesn't really do anybody any favours if they openly talk about such things. Some people would say, yes, there is a climate of fear, or at least some degree of oppression, which has got worse in recent months. But on the other hand, others will suggest that, you know, 16 years after the genocide, there is a need for the lid to be kept on certain problems, and therefore the kinds of freedoms that other people might enjoy in other African countries cannot happen here yet.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those freedoms and the electoral process with Stephen Kinzer. The genocide that we keep mentioning is from 1994, when 800,000 Rwandans were slaughtered. It's been 16 years, and many people point to Rwanda as a major success story on the continent, and they also say Paul Kagame is a real reason for that. Is there now kind of a turning of opinion in the lead-up to this elections?
I don't think so. What you say is quite true. Rwanda's story in the years since genocide is amazing. If you look at Somalia, that's more or less what Rwanda should look like now, because that's what Rwanda looked like when in the mid-90s, just like Somalia. But Rwanda has come up to be this spectacular development success story. So I don't think anybody is starting to question that. What's happened in Rwanda has riveted the attention of people all over the developing world. But nobody ever held up President Kagame as a great model of a Swiss-style democracy. So when this election campaign revealed that in Rwanda there are limits to politics and there are certain things that the regime believes are too dangerous for people to be allowed to say in public, and themes that are too dangerous to be brought up during political campaigns, this is nothing new. We are only seeing a confirmation of the general image that many people around the world, and certainly in Africa, have of Kagame. That is, a person who has come to the conclusion that his society is now too volatile to be allowed the full freedoms to debate sensitive ethnic issues, but meanwhile, it can still make tremendous economic progress.
Well, is that really what's at heart here? I mean, we're talking about a leader who's great at development and not at democracy. I mean, is he worried that his country's too volatile, or is he just simply trying to hold on to power?
I don't think it's about personally holding on to power. But I do think President Kagame and the people around him have concluded that democracy, the ability to open up and say whatever you want, is what led to the genocide. And right now, if you had true majority rule in Rwanda, maybe the majority would turn out to be those people that committed the genocide and all their friends and relatives. The last time they were in power, they killed the minority. Therefore, is it really a wise thing to open up a political system to the return of those kinds of forces? How in the modern world do you balance the need to prevent some huge new catastrophe which may lie ahead for Rwanda, but at the same time give people enough freedom so that they can develop themselves and be secure. This is a very delicate balance. Kagame has had to err on the side of security and development during his first seven-year term. He is now about to be elected to what, according to the Constitution, has to be his last second seven-year term. During this term, he's going to have to pay more attention to this question of how can we develop a system that allows for some democratic continuity without taking the lid off and allowing explosive tensions to rip that society apart again.
Right, but these are relatively serious accusations from his opponents and from the editor of a local language tabloid who actually fled the country after a colleague at the tabloid was shot dead. These are allegations against the Kagame administration that they've engaged in violent tactics to quiet political opposition. That seems like it's going to lead up to increased tensions, not more stability.
The acts of violence are very troubling, and I don't think they fit into this question that we talked about earlier,
right,
of how much debate can you allow. Those have to be dealt with, and the question of accountability is always hanging in the background for Kagame and the people around him, and that's going to be something that's going to be difficult to deal with as you try to figure out how to make a transition to some other person or form at the end of this seven-year term.
And do you imagine that they will successfully navigate those waters? Are we going to see the tensions begin to rise again in Rwanda, this time because of political differences?
I think that as this seven-year term starts to unfold and perhaps come towards its end, there's going to be more intense debate over this question. How much strain can Rwandan society stand? Is it now time to take the lid off and allow everybody to say and do whatever they want, or is it still too dangerous? This debate will dominate private discussions in Rwanda now over these coming years.
And how exactly do you construct a democracy, as he said, a Swedish-style democracy, when you're worried about whether or not you can allow people to say whatever they want?
Although, thinking larger there in East Africa, you've got two interesting data points here. Last week, the constitutional election in Kenya,
right,
which really ended a moment of corruption and instability in that country. Does it connect with what's going on in Rwanda, I wonder?
Well, and then there's so many data points coming out of Africa in terms of the various stages of democracy. It's amazing. Anyhow, Stephen Kinzer is the author of 1,000 Hills, Rwanda's Rebirth and the Man Who Dreamed It. And Will Ross joined us as well. He's the East Africa correspondent for our partner, the BBC. He joined us earlier from a polling station in the capital of Rwanda.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.